There we are, Baz, back at the Sporting Spotlight, mate. You know we like to get the big names around Australia. And if we can, we'll get some big around the world. But gather round, about to start next week, and we thought, who would be the biggest name with the biggest number of players
and
big names,
man.
The busiest bloke next week? Because every agent will consume into South Australia. It'll be
no problem. They're all here.
So let's get the number one bloke. We thought, let's get the number one bloke.
Yep.
Luckily, he's an Adelaide guy.
Yep.
Super. So I know we're lucky to get him because normally he's modelling. He does a lot of stuff for Cleo, doesn't he?
we're
talking about the great Terry Limbaum joins us.
Thanks,
Terry, how are you, mate?
Good. And I'm only big in this state.
Are you, mate?
The others,
big enough, mate. You're big enough.
Hey, mate, let's talk about representing people and creating an agency. And what drew you to it?
Well, I started when I was 17. I was I started as a bouncer, and I used to be a bouncer
here
in Adelaide. I used to.
Sam's.
I started off at St Clair.
Yeah.
Johnny Farnham's the same age as me.
Yeah.
I used to hold him on stage by the belt while he sang "Sadie the Cleaning Lady," believe it or not, and to 3,000 screaming little girls. So it started. I started bouncing. I had a brother called Kevin.
Yep.
Who was one of the best entertainers in Adelaide.
Really good.
Had his own band.
Yes, he did.
My young brother's musical. Come from a musical family. So I started doing things. I started managing when I was about 21, Kevin, all right? And it just went from there. And then I started bringing in sportsmen. I just diversified everything. So by the time I was 30, by the time I was 32, I had every venue in South Australia, or 98% of them, all right? One stage when I had my office up in Unley Park, I had six girls in the office, just answering phones.
Wow.
That's how good it was.
Vegas Promotions, mate? Has it always been
Promotions? No, it was Yellowstone Promotions.
Yellowstone.
And I sold Yellowstone Promotions, and they didn't do too well. And I had 2 or 3 years off. And the guy, Vegas Promotions, was going in. They were small compared to me. And they rang me and said, will you join? His name was Bruce Brandon. So I did. And I turned that into the biggest agency in town because I know every bugger and I can talk. And always got good talent and always looked after people.
So, mate, you touched on it there. Talent's the key. Whether we talk about footy teams being successful, business being successful, how difficult to get really good talent? You've got some of the biggest names. How difficult to get them? Do they come to you?
You've got to go to them. They're the interstaters. There's a lot of good talent in South Australia. The singers in Adelaide, as good as anything in the world, right? And they're, you know, walking down the street. You know, it's just where you are at the right time to be a big name, right?
Mm.
But some of the people that think they've got talent, it'll tell you you've got talent. They're the best. If you pick someone at the airport, and they're a comedian, for instance, and there's a guy called, I'm not going to use his name, he was American. He was the worst actor I've ever brought into my life. He spoke like this, and he was a colonel in the army. And during the Vietnam War, he ran all the, you know, Randy Caster, his name was. Colonel Randy Caster. Can I tell you this story? It was Christmas time. And I've got shows on everywhere, you know. And this one was for Radio Rentals, were huge in those days. And they had a big show at the the Hilton, whole ballroom. And I had two shows. We had another one of the big buildings, all building supplies out at a big hall out at Paradise. Another 600 people. And I picked Randy Caster up at the airport. This is a true story. Now, you know, comedians are usually quick. They move quick. They talk quick. Randy got off the plane and he's got a safari suit on with piping.
Oh,
And he's well into his 70s. And I thought, what happened was the guy that was supposed to do it pulled out from Sydney in the last minute. So I had 2 weeks in the middle of December to find an act. Mm-hmm. So I'm ringing every agent in Sydney. I got on this guy and he said, this guy's fantastic, Randy Costa. He's done this, he's done that. He's worked with Sinatra, he's worked with Bob. I thought, this bloke's all right. So I had to, boy. So I brought him over, picked him up at the airport. He was walking so slow, it was like he wasn't. There was something wrong with him. Everything was slow motion. And comics are very quick. Mm. I thought, shit. Anyway, by the time we got to the old airport, we drove to the gate. And he told me, he said, do you know any jewellers? I said, yeah, I know the girl that used to have Shay Gilders up at Burnside. I forget her name. She's a good tennis table tennis player. She committed suicide. Lovely girl. Anyway. Yeah. I said, why do you want to, you know? He said, my girlfriend and I were out, my wife and I were out to dinner last night in Double Bay, and she's my seventh wife. I said, really? Okay. And my third wife was there and turned into a bit of a wine fight, and we ended up out in the street throwing wine at each other. So that's all good stuff, you know. So I took him up to Burnside Village, and we walked in, and it's all the women there in their pleated dresses with the big buttons and their twin sets. This is Friday night, 5 o'clock. Walked in with, he walked up the counter. He said, "Want to buy some Lucky Charms?" So she, I can't think of the girl's name. She was lovely. Got out the Lucky Charms, and he said, "How much is that one?" She said, "That one's $450." He said, "I'll give you $350." I said, "What are you doing?" I said, "This is a suburban jewelry shop." He said, "I know how to handle these people."
Oh,
and it got worse. I'm apologising to him. "I'll give you $250. I'll give you." So I think he bought something. I was going to strangle him. So we get out in the car. I picked him up that night to go to the Hilton. And he started telling me, he said, "I work with the Bob Hope, Bob, and I work with this guy and I work with that guy." He said, also, he said, "I was great mates." He said, "You know Rocky, the boxer Rocky?" I said, "Marciano, Marciano." I said, "Yeah." I knew Rocky really well. He said, "In fact, I've got the dates wrong." He said, "When he went down the plane in 59, he was wearing my pin." I thought to myself, I think I've read that. Marciano dies with his pin on.
Yeah.
And he lied to me. And you've never seen anyone die on stage like this bloke. I had a couple of sights acts on down at the building show. And honestly, you could have got up and told jokes. And he opened with this. And I've never heard anyone do this. I've heard about it. He said, take my mother-in-law, please." And it's just dead silence, you know. At one stage, there were people walking past into the smorgasbord table. He kept talking. I pulled him off. I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I thought that went really well." I said, "You did 15 minutes. I had to take him to the Hilton on Saturday night. I said, "Look, please, it's the Hilton, it's Radio Rentals. You know, these people go out once a year. You know, I could have taken the dog up there and done tricks." It's about a 20-minute walk, 20-feet walk to get to him. He's on the stage, and he started up there. And the one thing he did was all right. It went for about 2 minutes. Is he pulled a girl out of the audience. And he'd tap her on the shoulder, and when he tapped her on the shoulder, she had to open and close her mouth. And he'd say, "I'm horny." And I could see the boss of Radio Rentals, who dealt with them every year, and around the Hilton ballroom, there's these little doorways about 3 feet wide where they bring the food.
Yeah.
So I'm outside, and I can see him looking for me. And I'm moving around the room. He finally caught up to me. He said, "Terry, get him off." "Get him off now." I said, he ran up and grabbed the microphone and he said, "Randy Custer, thank you very much, please." Boom, he was gone. He said to me after, he said, "I thought that went
pretty well.
It was delusional, you know."
Yeah, but obviously. Look,
there are mad people, aren't
there? You would have had many, many, obviously you would have had many, many, but people that come in, is there one or two that have you've been a little bit jumpy with, you know, as far as, is he going to do the stuff here or...
I'll tell you her name. She was the queen of pop 7 times, and her name's Alison Durbin.
Yes, remember Alison Durbin, yeah.
Right. I booked her down at Mitsubishi. It's the biggest social club in South Australia. It's 1,500 people. Lovely people. Dealt with them for years. Ran their entertainment for 25, 30 years. Went down with it. She arrived by plane with her husband, who was an ex-FBI, boss in the drug squad in Melbourne or Sydney.
Yeah.
Went to rehearsals, sung like a bird, she had a beautiful voice, slim, looked good.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I knew she'd had drug problems in the past.
Yeah.
Anyway, her MD drove over, my musical director. He arrived there in the afternoon or something. So I got down to the gig at, you know, say 8 o'clock. I got the money to pay everybody, and I paid him, the manager, the husband. And I couldn't get to her. He's trapped me in the hallway going up to the big stage, and I couldn't get up. He said, "Oh, we want to do more business with you," and yada, yada, yada. Meantime, by this stage, she's gone onto the stage, and he was stopping me from... So I had a really good reading band there, right? And they had all the charts in it, and they started to play. She got a minute into the song, and she stopped and got the microphone and said, my mother loved this song. She really... And started crying.
Mm-hmm.
The keyboard player's like this. By this stage, she's sitting on his lap. And he's going, you know... She wandered off into the crowd... The spotlight guy couldn't find her. She was off her tree. She was over in the corner sitting on some bloke's lap talking about her mother. That was the most embarrassing night of my life. And there's a woman that won 7.
Yeah, she did.
Tell me.
Queen of Pops or whatever she was, yeah.
You know, mate, we talk about dealing with these people. Well, tell us about your experience, mate, at the Oscars, the Logies. You've red carpeted, mate.
Yeah,
what was that like?
Well, I've been looking after Ann Wills for years.
Great lady.
She used to do movie scene.
Yep.
And she said, "Oh, Terry, you want to come to the Oscars?" And then Randy, then, no one got it. She said, "Terry, do you want to come to the Oscars?" I said, "We wouldn't want to do that." So she said, "I'll get you a ticket." It took her 4 years because you can't buy a ticket. When you arrive there, 350 people go in, about 50,000 watch it. They build the, they call bleachers, right? Like the football, right?
Okay.
And I think Spook Daddy or Spook, whatever his name was, in front of us. Jack Nicholson was behind us. And yeah, you pull up by the Hugo Boss on. I looked right in those days. And Ann said, look, the Americans are stupid. They'll think you're someone, right? So I've got out of the car and they're cheering. I'm waving back. I'm originally from Woodville South. Anyway, yeah, got inside and I thought to myself, you know, at the time they were looking for a new James Bond. And Ann just said, Terry, you'd make a great James Bond. And downstairs, there would have been billions of dollars down there, Spielberg, all those sort of guys. But when you get there, they take everything away from you. They except your underpants. They take your phone, they, you know, twice. There's big security guys, the CIA or whatever. If you were to bomb downstairs there, imagine what damage you do, plus you kill all the rich Jews in America. So we got in there, and because Ann knew the guy running the Oscars, you're not allowed to take photos in there, but we got photos through this guy. He was taking photos for us. No one else had photos except the press when they come in. We walked down the red carpet. So we get in there, and the terrible thing was that year, the main movie was about two gay cowboys. I forget what it was called.
Breakback Mountain.
Oh, yeah. I watched 5 minutes on the plane. I thought, they won it, okay?
Yeah.
So fantastic. Down under the stage, they've got a 50, 100-piece orchestra playing all the old themes. That make the hair stand up on the back of your head. So at halftime, or whatever you want to call it, they have a break. There's a big marble ballroom, which you can go out and have a cigarette, because I was smoking in those days. So I got up to the ballroom. Ann Wills was already out there. And when I got there, suddenly to the side, this girl appeared next to me. She'd be 5'11", bare feet. And I opened the door, and she said, no, 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 you go first. I said, now listen, you get for that door now. And she picked the accent because they like Australians.
Yep.
She said, no, I said, now listen, you get for that doorway now. And we had this little tete-a-tete for about 10 seconds. And she was smiling at me and I was smiling at her and I'm an old playboy. But I had a girlfriend back here in Adelaide. So I walked off. She went to the right. I went to the left and I thought, I'll just have a look at her because she appeared right next to me. And I looked at her and she was about 10 feet. And she looked around too. I smiled, she smiled. So she went over and she's standing with her group and we're looking at each other and she's grinning at me, I'm grinning. I said, Ann, see that bird over there? That woman over there, you can't say bird anymore. And she said, yeah, or person over there. She said, that woman over there, that person in the dress.
It.
I said, and she was looking at her smile. I said, I can have a go at her. I won't tell you what she said. She put an F in it. She said, that's Irma Thurman. I could be Mrs. Irma Thurman. Anyway, I told my son about it, and he put an F in it too. He said, Dad, you're an F an idiot. I said, she's probably in Hollywood right now saying, I met Terry Lindblom.
She probably dropped your name. That's how she got all the big roles, mate.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But that was it was good. Everyone in Los Angeles is an act. Every place you go into, because we stayed in Hollywood, and you say to the waiter, you know, well, you're studying. No, 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 I'm a stand-up comic. Come and see my show.
Stand-up comic.
I'm an actress.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, it was good.
Everybody's the same there, aren't they? It's an acting town.
Yeah, and my hero, I love him, Jack Nicholson, come out. And he walked out on stage like you'd walk into a barbecue.
Yeah.
Just strolled out there casual, made a little speech.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Brilliant. He's got an aura about him.
I love him.
Yeah. Mate, there's always a funny story. There's always stories that you've got that other people haven't heard. Mate, have you got one you could share with us?
I will.
You'd have to have a thousand.
This one's going to cause...
chaos?
I reckon, I can't remember. It was the grand final.
Footy?
Yep, and it was, I can't even remember who was playing, but...
Be Ports.
Well, I don't know about that. It was at Footy Park, and it was packed. It was before the AFL started here. I had Ricky May there. Ricky's one of the nicest blokes you'd ever meet. He was about 5'9". He had bigger boobs than women. He was huge, right? Yeah. And he had his stomach stapled and nothing worked, right? And we'd have lunch, and I'd have a chicken salad. He'd have hamburger, chips, Coke, milkshake, you know. I said, Rick, you're gonna kill you. And it smoked like a train. He said, Rick, you're going to kill you. He said, yeah, I know. Nothing I can do about it. But he was up, and he could sing. So we went down to Football Park, and just the day before, do a rehearsal. He walked out in the middle of the oval and walked back. He said, do people run around here? I said, yeah. He said, this is just walking out and walking back. So we went through this songs. What he was going to do, he was going to do a trilogy of little songs, you know, just a little bit like, you know, Candyman or whatever. Then he was going to go into the big song, Advance Australia Fair. Is that our... Yeah.
Yep.
So we got down there. No one knows about this story. I had a house at Unley Park, and my office was there too. He stayed at my place at Unley Park. So I get up in the morning, and we're heading down to footy park, and it's probably 11 o'clock. And I had a Mercedes Sports. He said, take the hood off. I said, mate, he said, take the hood off, buddy, take it off. So I took the hood off. We drove down there. We got to the start of the boulevard, and there's cars stacked bumper to bumper, coppers everywhere, people walking on him. I'm sitting there driving the car, so I could smell marijuana. I thought, Jesus. He's pulled out a baseball bat out of his pocket, a joint. I won't tell you, but I said, what are you doing? He said, it's all right, buddy, no one will know. I said, no one will know. I'm in a red Mercedes Sports with Ricky May smoking a joint. Anyway, I said, put it out. He said, no, I said, put it out. So he put it out. I said, Rick. He said, no, buddy. I said, Rick, you can't do that sort of stuff, all right? So we finally get down there. Who's the boss? What was his name?
Lee Wicker.
Lee Wicker took us up and put us in his office. No one knows this. Lee doesn't know it. No one knows it. Put us in his office. All the windows up there aren't open. You can't open them. They're all sealed.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, he's in Lee Wicker's office. Right?
Oh, no.
He said, I'm hungry, mate. I said, yeah. I went downstairs and he wanted two hamburgers and chips and Coke, and which I got. I had a chicken sandwich. So I brought it up. As the lift's open, we're the only ones up there. As the lift opened, I could smell it again.
Yep. He's just lit up.
I said, what are you doing? He's smoking a joint in Lee Wicker's office. I said, for Christ's sake, Ricky, what are you doing, you know? And he arced up at me. I said, no, come on, this is bullshit. This is a professional gig. This is going to be filmed around Australia, yada, yada, yada. I've done them before, mate. He said, I've done two grand finals for the rugby and I've done New Zealand. I said, I don't give a stuff. This is the boss's office. And I couldn't pull him out and take him home then. And he was used to doing it. So they get us and they take us down through the tunnel or whatever, you know. And he ran out, we didn't run. He wobbled out, you know. He's a nice bloke, though. I like Ricky. Got out in the middle of the oval and he started doing it. The music's playing and he did a couple little trilogies or whatever. Then he went into the big song, Advance at Trade Fair. And he got a bit into it and he started tapping the top of the microphone because, you know. And Lee Wicker had Blake climbing up to find out what's going on. Then he come back on again. He started singing again. Then he's opening and closing his mouth. You know, I realised after the second time he did it, he'd forgotten
words.
the main words. All right, you know, I can't remember which part of the main. So he did that all the way through. And I thought, oh, God. So I've got him off, and we're heading down the race, and Lee Wick and all these about 10 blokes follow us, apologising. I sit out at the side of the mouth. I said, you forgot the words, didn't you? He said, yeah. He said, I don't understand. He said, I've done it in Melbourne. I've done it in Sydney. So that's a story that no one knows, and I don't want anyone to know. It's a secret.
Well, lucky you put it on a podcast. No,
yeah. It was 35, 40 years ago. There was nothing I'd do about it. It went well except for that. And they actually thought the microphone, but he was very quick. Because mate, he was tapping the top of the microphone. Yeah. He wasn't. And he was... He's very sharp. Didn't do me any good, but they loved him. It went well, and Lee apologised, and everybody, you know, sorry.
I'm wondering what the biggest sin is here, mate. Smoking a joint in Lee Wicker's office, or forgetting the words.
Well, I think that have something to do with it.
Do you reckon?
But he used to do that all the time. The night he died in Sydney, he was doing double shows in the jazz bar in that hotel in Sydney. He was doing a show every 2 hours. They're playing cards upstairs. He smoked like a train, ate absolute terrible food, smoked marijuana, smoked cigarettes, and he was doing cocaine. And he would have been 20 stone and 5 foot seven or 5 foot eight.
It's hard to imagine anything going wrong, isn't
it? No, you think he'd be right.
You think he'd be right.
He dropped dead in the lift. Open the door.
There he is.
You remember the words, Rick?
I mean, you've had to work with a lot of difficult people.
Yeah.
Barry Curtin, Chopper Reed, a couple of names that just float into my mind. Could you take us through a little bit of a tour with those couple of hooligans, mate?
Not a problem. I can tell you the worst person I dealt with, but those days with Barry, I had a comedian, and Chopper were some of the best days I've had. Chopper was one of the best people I ever had. He'd just stay at my place once a month for a week, 7 months of the year. And he was a fantastic bloke to deal with. He was honest, he was loyal. And as he said, I never took money off squareheads like you. You know, he was a maniac because he used to rob people, the drug dealers, the heavies. He robbed all the... He should be dead. Mm. He used to say to me, he loved Carl Williams. I said, why? He said, he got rid of all my enemies. All of them. He got rid of every one of them. Right? But he was good. But Barry and Chopper and I, Though they were good days, and we laughed and laughed and laughed. And Barry will tell you, Chopper wasn't a bad guy. He was scary.
No,
to
he says that.
If you didn't know him. Yeah. But Barry wants to tell the story, and this is a true story. I think we left Port Augusta. Was it Port Augusta, Barry?
We left to go to where?
Kingapiti.
Oh, well, we went to...
Roxby Downs
first, yeah.
And the last town we stayed at, I didn't even check the petrol. So I've got them two in the car, and Chopper's sitting next to me. And we're driving, and I'm looking... we've got about, I don't know, 50 k's out of Roxby Down. I thought, the gauge, I thought...
Oh, this is on the way to Cooper Petey.
Yeah.
We'd been to Roxby because we had the tape, remember?
That's right.
The tape.
Oh, yeah, we're going to... Oh,
the reason we didn't stop and get fuel
was
because Chopper was going to kill the owner.
No, we stopped at the roadhouse where you turn off. You know the roadhouse where you turn off?
Yep.
Yeah,
and it's called Harry's. Everyone knows it or something. And we went in there and he's going through CDs, right? And he picked the CD out, two CDs out. And some smart ass had been in there and taken CDs out of and put, you know, Puff the Magic Dragon with the Harvey and mixed them all up. So we get out in the car. No, I didn't get petrol there. I forgot about it.
No, we didn't get petrol deliberately on the way back.
Yeah.
That's what we didn't do.
No, we were heading to
Cooper Petey.
Cooper Petey.
We're coming back from Roxby.
Yeah.
Past that road out again.
That's right. Yeah.
And we didn't stop because there was a threat of.
Well, there's not a lot of petrol stations after that either, by the way.
He thought he bought some heavy music and he put it on it with Hall & Oates, which we liked.
Yeah.
He was going to kill that. I'm going to go back and kill that bloke. I can't do Chopper. I can do most, but I can't. He was going to go and kill this bloke. But we headed out of there and I got about 50 k's out of Roxby.
Out of Cooper Petey.
Cooper Petey.
Yeah.
And the gauge, right? Christ, we're not going to make this, right? So stay calm, put it on remote control, whatever, and it's getting down and down and down. I think we're going to have to get some petrol. You know, all the blokes up there have got these big caravans,
yep.
Right? And they've got petrol on the back and those big cans and whatever. So there's a bloke in a caravan, a big caravan behind it with cans, of jerry cans full of red wine of petrol. And I said, I'll try and get this guy. So I pulled up next to him on the highway because there's not many people around. And I asked Chopper to wind the window down. I was going to ask the guy, right? Chopper stuck his head out the window with no ears. The bloke, really, didn't he? He nearly fell out of his... Is he going, you got any petrol? The bloke shit himself. His wife. He nearly ran off the road. But he didn't say, excuse me, you got petrol?
Yeah.
Anyway, he didn't... He wound his window up and tried to go as fast as he could.
Yeah.
We got in there, didn't we?
It was unbelievable.
We were about 200 yards from the garage and we got out and we pushed it. Chopper, did Chopper... No.
No, what he did was... What Chopper did was... We all got out because we run out.
Yeah, yeah.
It was only a K out, weren't it?
Yeah.
So he said, right, we're all getting out to push. Oh, okay. You know, so me and Rich, the comedian, we're on the back of the...
Pushing.
Pushing, and Chopper's not pushing anything.
No. Right?
But then a guy stopped and said, hey, boys, I'll give you a tag into town, into the petrol station there. No, well, you know, friendly people. Oh, good on you, mate. So Chopper gets back in, and me and Rich go to get back in the car. He goes, no, not you two, too heavy. Mate, the weight's too heavy. You walk.
Off he went.
I stirred, they pushed.
And off he went.
No argument?
There's me and Rich. Oh, no. Well,
chose not to argue.
You going to argue?
No, I just want to clarify.
It was just funny that, he was a...
He was part, he had slight autism.
Yep.
And like you go, he didn't mean it because you'd go into a shop and there was two or three people waiting to be served, and he'd have $20 in the hand. There'd be something on the counter he wanted that cost 10, 15 bucks. He'd go over and step between them and take it off there and put that down there and say, "No worries, mate."
Yeah.
And the bloke would say, "I've got to put that through." Yeah. You know, put it through the
two.
Yeah. No, didn't worry about it.
Give him 15, 10 bucks tip.
Yeah.
He didn't understand. I say, mate,
well, when we walked into that roadhouse first time when he got the CD. There was a couple at the counter, and he was in front of me. He was always in front of me. I'm just behind Chopper. If any trouble, I'm behind Chopper. And he walked in, and he just walked up to this couple and went, put his arms out like that, and he spread them apart. They were being served at the time, and he just went, spread them apart. Oh, can I? And the bloke went, hey, oh dear. He was just about
not the kind of bloke to argue with.
Well, no. Because Chopper is so recognisable. That's the thing. Everybody recognises him. He got no ears, for a start.
And Barry,
the
never,
guy went, oh, yeah,
Barry,
oh,
he
yeah.
didn't, because of the autism, he didn't know he was doing something.
I know, that's what
he
we're
said,
trying
no,
to say. Yeah.
What do you mean? I said, you just can't do that. You've got to wait your turn. We got up to Roxby, and we used to auction off, just think about it. We'd get for a $50 baseball bat, we get $2,000 up there. Room full of 200 blokes, 200 blokes, machetes, anything that you can sign, right? And they'd line up, you know.
To have it.
Anyway, I'm up there this night. We've been doing this for months. I looked after him for years. Yeah. So I'm up there this night, and 250 men, blokes, you know, and they've all bought a baseball bat or a bloody machete or, you know, a dagger, something you'd injure somewhere.
Handgun,
and
rifle.
I'm having a couple of drinks because we're staying the night, and I had a thought, which is I should have done earlier, and I thought, what if a fight broke out here?
Mm.
And who sold them this stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never did it again. We used to give it to, you know, if you have kill each other in the car park, as they're leaving, they get it.
Yeah.
But all these boats got daggers and knives and
never had any
never
trouble.
Thought about it.
Well, he used to sign them. He used to sign the baseball bats. Never plead guilty. Mark Brandon Reed. That's how he used to sign them. And people would line up for him.
Yeah.
Mm. I was auctioning them there for a start. Yeah. But in the end, it was like, who wants them? Just, you know, people just kept coming out and getting them.
And
the other thing that was there, which really surprised me, was the first three or four rows of people, and they were always packed. Every show we did, packed, were women. Mm. And really good-looking women. Because I thought, naturally, well, yeah, I've dragged them in. I've dragged them in again.
Yeah.
It was Chopper.
Oh, yeah.
They just love Chopper. Everyone loved Chopper. He's a character, wasn't he? He's just a guy that...
I miss him.
Yeah, he was but some of the...
His wife's still a good friend of mine.
I think those trips that I did with Chopper were...
Good fun.
...were probably the best ones I've done. Because for laughs and for just unbelievable... It was just an unbelievable time.
Tour.
And the only one that my wife, Shelley, has ever sort of thought, hang on, I'm not sure I want you to do this one. I'm not sure you... no, I'll be right. You know, she goes, but it's Chopper Reed. Because I said to her when we got home from that first trip, Chopper's got nowhere to go, so I've got him coming up here for a few days. He's going to stay in the back room.
She would have been one of the ladies not in the front row.
I had a house at Malvern, which is a very good area.
Yep.
And there's a cafe in Duthie Street, the Duthie Street Cafe. And I'd take him in there in the morning, 10 or 11 o'clock, and have something to eat, coffee. And some of the old ladies, you know, you could see, they dropped their cupcake.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a nasty bloke. He would have,
He was fine. If you think about this, Phil, when we went to do the functions, when you get to a place, we would have lunch first, then go and look at the venue, and then go back to the room and have a bit of a kip or whatever for the show that night.
Hmm.
So you're at lunch in a pub. You got this bloke here who's 6'20" or whatever he is.
I used to be 6 foot.
Chopper's huge, right? Then you got me and Rich, the comedian. But you're sitting with Chopper.
Yeah.
You don't think about that, but the table over there is looking over at your table. Him. They know who he is. So they're looking at you going, well, hang on, who's he? What's he doing? It was a weird feeling. It was a weird feeling.
You know, it's interesting, mate. We talk about Chopper and people form opinions on people that you work with and they go, don't really like him. I'm scared of Chopper Reed. Sammy Newman, mate. I know you've spent a lot of time with Sammy. And I get to function. I spent a lot of time defending Sammy, saying he's not what you think. Have you had to do it? Well, let's talk about Sammy. He's just a highly intelligent, ripping bloke.
Phil,
gives a lot to charity.
It really upsets me.
Yeah.
Sam and I, with his wife who died, Amanda.
Yeah,
sad
story.
And the girl I was going out with.
Yep.
We went to Europe for 6 weeks. We're good mates. Right?
Yep.
And Sam is, and I've said this many times, he's the most honest, generous, brave man I've ever met.
Yeah.
And he's super intelligent. And I've often said to Sam, the most hated people in the world are people that tell the truth. And Sam, he always says, it's only my opinion, and they jump into him. Even now, I've had gigs set up and three women on the committee said, oh, it's not a good idea. Why?
Yeah.
They don't even come to the gigs.
That's right. Mm.
I had one just recently, a sportsman's night. I'm not going to, coming up, gather around, not going to say where or who. And I had, who did I get? Champion, North Melbourne, gets in trouble, keeps his...
Wayne Carey. Another... Good fella.
Wayne's a nice bloke, terrific bloke. They
made
said,
some mistakes,
we'll take him, yada, yada, yada. Settle it up, about to send the contracts. He ran back and said, Terry, we're not, can't go ahead with that one. I said, why? He said, two of the girls on the committee don't think it's a good idea.
Bingo.
I said, the two girls on the committee, do they come to the show?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure. We've got 200 blokes and 10 women.
Yeah.
And they don't like it.
Yeah, that's right.
I'd like to join a men's women's club where I could come along and say, I don't like that girl. Yeah. I'd get thrown out.
Yeah.
Mate, you do the best impressions of Sam Newman I've ever heard.
I do a good impression.
You do a very good
one. But he's easy to do when you spend time with him.
Yes.
He says
But is he misjudged?
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah.
Sam's one of the... You wouldn't meet a nicer... You know, years ago, I'd bring women along that I was going out with. I'd say, I don't like that Sam Newman. He's a misogynist. He's this, he's that. After about a couple of hours, I say, he's nothing what I thought he'd be. He's a lovely guy. Sam
cares. Everybody says the same thing.
Sam cares about people.
Yeah. Yes, right? Yeah.
But Sam does things like this. I can tell you a million stories about Sam, but he does make me laugh. We were in Paris and we're walking along, and my girl and I had gone into town on this, you know, those double decker buses, or in town, you know, those buses you sit up at the top, they're all over. And there was a big guy, about 35, 40, bodybuilder, you know, big, well built, good looking bloke. And he had his boyfriend with him, right? This is back 15 years ago, and they were holding hands, right? I didn't take any notice, it was Saturday morning, who cares? So we met up with Sam and Amanda, and we were going out to have lunch or something. And we got, remember the old days on Rundle Mall when there'd be a big crowd of people crossing the road?
Yeah.
It was like that, Paris. And these two guys are walking in front of us. And no, it's nothing I said, but they got up to the lights, all right? This is 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and they've turned to each other and have a big pash, right? And Sam's, now, Terry, that's bullshit. Now, that is grandstanding. I'm going to go and say something. I said, no, that is just bullshit. We wouldn't do it with a woman at 11 o'clock. And I said, Sam, no, that is bullshit. And I'm going to... I said, Sam, he went over and stood behind him. You know, he didn't say anything. He was... But Sam's very principled about old-fashioned about things. He didn't care that they were gay. But you don't do that on a Saturday morning in front of... That's disgraceful. That is grandstanding. And he won't let it go. The other day, Ann Wills... She came in and gave me all this. I don't know how to do it. Anne's always got presents for me. She comes here.
Yep. Lovely lady.
There's $10,000 wrapped. She's given me about $20,000 of these things. That looks just like a $100 note. I could show you. They look just like a $100. So I thought, just for fun, I'll send $1,000 over to Sam. And when Sam gets something in his claw, he won't let it go. He rang me about 3 days later. He said, Terry. He said, did you send me $1,000 of fake money? I said, yeah. He said, that is unbelievable. He said, that is unbelievable. He said, where'd you get it from? I said, and where would that is? That's illegal. I said, I don't know where she got them. She buys them in these plates. And he went on and on and on. He gave some to Wayne Carey because I heard Wayne Carey on his podcast said he gave one to his six-year-old kid. He said, that's not real. I'm telling you now, except for the little seal that you can see through. If you glue two together and put it in a grip of hundreds, I've got $25,000 worth of money. If anyone wants to lend money, ring me.
Mate, have you got a couple of faves? Have you got a couple of faves over the journey? I mean, you've been
a
long time, mate. Is there a couple of
faves? Sportsman-wise, I've got a few.
Yep.
Dougie Hawkins.
Great man.
Nicest man you'd meet in a day's march.
Yep.
Greg Ritchie's a good mate. Mahatma.
Funny man.
Sam is my favourite. Yep. He's my mate. And they're all, there's four or five blokes that are good mates, and I've known them for years.
Showbiz side, is there a couple there?
Number one, and Barry will know, and he's a mate of mine, married to Jane Scully. He was the best corporate comedian for 30 or 40 years. His name's Paul Martell. He works out of Sydney.
Brilliant.
He doesn't, you think I do a good impersonation of Jack Nicholson? I do Jack Nicholson, but he does. He's the best.
He's brilliant.
And you would have seen him. He doesn't swear, he comes out in a tuxedo. He's, plus being a great bloke, he's the best entertainer, comedian in Australia.
Absolutely.
But he's retiring now.
Hey, Terry, I listened to your talk. I know Baz has spent a lot of time here. He talks about it with a great fondness. It appears that sometimes with agents, mate, it appears that it's just business transaction. I get you a gig. Here's your gig. Here's your money. See you later. Yeah. You seem to have formed this really good friendship with quite a lot of them.
With some you can.
Yes.
But, you know... There's
some you can't?
Oh, look, I've brought it. There's a guy called... You've got to be careful. His name's Ostentatious.
Yep.
He is singularly... the worst act in Australia. I can't believe it. I booked him once. I brought him in for five gigs once. And the first one was at St. Paul's, and it was the Allens. Remember the Allens used to own St. Paul's? And they had the Hackney Hotel as well?
Yeah.
And it was, place was packed, and he got up on stage, and I can't repeat the first joke he told, but it was about, you've been in those shoes all day, you might know the joke I'm talking about. That was his opening line, and just disgraceful. And every show I took to him, it just got worse and worse. In the end, with the last one at the Lakes Resort where he died, it would have been 12 12:30 at night, and before we went home, we went to that bar there at the back, that Butte bar. When I'm drunk, I'm funny. And I'm being funny. I'm not telling jokes, just being funny.
Yeah.
And blokes are saying to him, "You should be managing Terry."
Yeah.
I picked him up at the Hackney Hotel, and I got at the Hackney Hotel. He wouldn't let me pick him up at the airport. So I'm walking around the Hackney Hotel, I'm asking barmaids, I'm looking for a big, tall bloke. He's big, about 6'4". No. And it's, you know, it's getting near time. So I went into this other bar, and I said to the guy, he said, "A guy went in there about half an hour ago, but he said, that room's closed." So I went into this room. He's on drugs, obviously. I opened the door, and it's complete darkness. I'm looking around, and I can't remember his first name. I yelled out. He said, "Yeah, mate." He's sitting in a booth in the dark. I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm waiting for you." I said, "How would I know you're in here?" Anyway, let's go and do it. So we did it. We're driving back down. He's got two more shows to do for the next day. And he had a big, fat guy who used to ring me up all the time from Sydney, was his agent, and he had a cold 24/7.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't take cocaine, but okay, he still liked the smell. Anyway, he was off his tree eating hamburgers. Apparently he's a big fat guy. "Give me a hamburger, Dale. I'll pay you for two tomorrow." Anyway, so we're driving down the Port Road, and he's doing this on the dashboard of a car. Looking straight ahead, sunglasses, 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. He said to me, "Not paying double commissions." I said, "What are you talking about?" You know? He said, "Not paying double." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Not paying you and Fred." I said, "I don't care what you're paying Fred. Fred's giving me your fee. Yeah. I put my money on top. You're paying me.
Yeah.
Not paying doubles." This is by the brewery.
Yeah.
And I'm holding the steering wheel like this by now because I've had a gutful of this guy.
Yeah.
So by the time we got to the Hilton, I've lost it, all right? And I've pushed the door open in the Mercedes Sports again. And I said, "You'll pay me. I haven't paid him for any gigs yet." I said, "You've got two more to do tomorrow. Mm. And you're going to do them. And I never want to see you again." And I pushed him out on the road, on the footpath, right? I can't remember his name. He's a Jewish, but very intelligent. He's a professor or something.
Yeah.
He did a job for me up at Stony for Winery, and I put a comedian on before him just to warm the crowd up, who's quite a good comedian, Adelaide comedian.
Yeah.
And he sat around to watch him, see his show when he came on, and he spent the first 15 minutes bagging this bloke, using him as a prop. He's just an ordinary. He's probably the worst I've ever brought into town, ever.
Wow.
Mate, Vegas Promotions, a massive company in Adelaide. You're the biggest, without doubt, in Adelaide. So you've still got the energy, mate. You're still doing
I'm
starting to wind down.
Yeah, I'm getting I'm so old, when I was born, the Dead Sea was just sick. I'm making it a bit smaller, if you know what I mean.
You keep topping up those one-liners,
mate. No, I've got a guy who's coming into business with me.
Yep.
And he's going to look after the entertainment side of it.
Yep.
He's a terrific bloke. He's got four bands. And him and his wife used to tour Australia, the world. They used to he lived in Dubai for a year doing all the hard rock cafes and everything.
Yeah.
And he's going to come in with me. And from the moment he rang me when he was coming to Adelaide, and I've been looking after him for the last 10 years. And he's as honest as the day's long. Him and his wife, she's a German girl. And never, if anyone approached him, it's not Terry, or ring Terry. All right?
Yeah.
And we've had this rapport. And he's the perfect bloke. Because the people I deal with, I've been dealing with for years, and especially my good mates. And he's the perfect bloke to take over and help me out.
Vegas Promotions Christmas party, mate. It's one of the biggest events. You have, in fairness, mate, invited me three or four times. I've been away, but will they still continue, mate?
No, it's not quite
500 people, free grogs. You know, none of those people, after the gig stopped, don't even send me a phone call, ring me
Thank
up.
Thank you, card, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And they drank my drink. I'd give them free booze for 3 hours, say 7 to 10:30 or whatever, it's 2.5 hours. When the free grog went off and you had to pay, they'd go home. One bloke was complaining there's no food. I said, it's a piss up. You see, you have food. You know? It starts at 7 o'clock. Have a quince before you go out, you dickhead.
That's right.
You know who used to say that? Kevin used to say that. So I used to say, we get to a show and they'd say, "Well, you like something to eat?" And Kevin said, "No, I had a quince before I left home."
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a joke.
Well, I had a sandwich yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. A lemon last night.
Okay. We could talk to you forever. If you had to give some advice to a young entrepreneur that's going to set up a business like yours, what's the best piece of advice?
Don't do it.
Terry Limbom, our special guest. We'll have him back because we haven't even got past a tenth of the, a hundredth of the stories he's got to share with us.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate your time,
that.
Mate.
Good on you, mate.
I know these blokes. They're good blokes.
Hey, folks, if you enjoyed that, we'd really like you to like, share, and subscribe to the channel. It really does help us out a lot.